Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast from Canberra. I'm Michelle Grattan. The government will soon consider changes to the Racial Discrimination Act, which it argues inhibits free speech. That legislation prohibits actions that offend, insult, humiliate, or intimidate people on racial grounds. The government says the problems with the legislation have been highlighted by the successful action against columnist Andrew Bolt over his articles about fair-skinned Aborigines. But the plan to change or rescind the 18C section of the Act has sharply divided the Human Rights Commission. New Commissioner for Human Rights Tim Wilson wants the section scrapped entirely, while Race Discrimination Commissioner Tim Soutphommasane says that the section has served a useful purpose and should be retained. He strongly defended it in a major lecture this week. Tim, could you outline for us what you think is so important about this section that it shouldn't be fiddled with?
I believe our laws need to send a strong message about racial vilification. Society takes its cue from political leadership. Our laws help to set the tone of our behaviour in society. If we are a multicultural society and a liberal democratic society, it's only right that we have laws that reflect our commitment to civility and tolerance. And the laws under Section 18C ensure that ordinary Australians can hold others accountable for racial vilification. It's a modest but very practical provision. It ensures that people can make complaints about racial discrimination and have the opportunity to be brought to a conciliation and have another party hear why it is that their behaviour has caused harm.
So how do you think the argument will end up? Do you think the government will compromise, or do you think it'll get rid of the section entirely?
We have a very interesting and live debate on this issue. Community groups, including numerous ethnic and Indigenous communities, have made very clear their strong concern about a repeal or significant amendment to the law. At the same time, there are those who are advocating very passionately for the change, for a change in the law. So you have a diverse range of opinion in the debate at the moment, and I believe it's important that we deliberate on the values that are at stake here. Yes, there is a question about freedom of speech in play, but this freedom has never been absolute. We've always had restrictions or limitations of some kind. We have laws concerning trade practices which restrict what we can say. We have defamation laws. We have national security laws. We have public offence laws, which make it potentially of criminal liability for you to use offensive language in public places. We also have an interest in what I believe is a freedom from racial vilification. What is often forgotten in the debate is that the exercise of free speech when it concerns racial abuse or harassment can have a very harmful effect on the freedom of others, the ability of others to exercise their freedom of speech or indeed freedom of movement.
And you're somewhat well placed to engage in this free speech debate, which the government's putting a lot of emphasis on, because your whole background is as a political philosopher.
Indeed. Who would have thought political philosophy would have been useful, Michelle? I welcome the philosophical debate on these issues because it is vitally important that we get our first principles right. I've been alarmed by the use of freedom in our debate, though. It has been used in a sometimes dogmatic fashion, and if we're not careful, we can debase the concept of freedom, particularly if we are guided by ideological polemic rather than genuine conviction and principle.
Do you think that that whole concept of freedom, and you dealt with that at length in your lecture this week, do you think that people just simplify it down to freedom from restraints, whereas, of course, it can be seen in all sorts of different ways, can't it?
It can, and without being too philosophical or too lengthy about the matter, many so-called classical liberals will turn to Isaiah Berlin as as their benchmark for what liberty should mean. And Isaiah Berlin, in a famous lecture, talked about there being two concepts of liberty, as you allude to. The negative conception of liberty being about a freedom from interference or coercion, and a positive conception of liberty, which is about freedom to, or freedom that is bound up in an ideal of self-realization. Now, I think over time people have just believed that freedom, if it is to be meaningful, only means an absence of constraint. But I think the way that we use freedom in our everyday conversations can't be divorced from human purposes or motives. And Isaiah Berlin himself made a very pointed warning that one value should not guide all others, including liberty. As he put it, total liberty for the wolves can mean death to the lambs. Classical liberals of all people should be heeding this warning.
Now, also in your lecture, you made the point that there hadn't really been a problem with this section of the Racial Discrimination Act, but of course many people thought that the Bolt case showed that there was a problem. What did you think of that judgment? Do you think it was justified, or do you think that it overstepped the mark?
The Bolt judgment was consistent with the jurisprudence that has existed since 1995 on Part 2A of the Racial Discrimination Act. There's a lot of misconception and misunderstanding, in my view, about the Bolt case. It's common, for example, for media commentators to refer to Bolt having been prosecuted or convicted under the Racial Discrimination Act, which is not true because the Act only provides civil remedies and no criminal penalties. The heart of the matter, though, lies in the idea that Andrew Bolt was found to have been in breach of the law simply because he had offended or insulted people, and that hurt feelings were enough to constitute a breach of the law. That's not the case. The law states that an act is unlawful if it is reasonably likely in all the circumstances to offend, insult, humiliate, or intimidate, which is not a subjective standard, but an objective one. In all the circumstances, reasonably likely, these point to there being an objective test of the reasonable person who is a member of the group to which the complaining party belongs. There is neglected as well Section 18D of the Racial Discrimination Act, which provides free speech exemptions for anything that's fair comment or fair reporting on a matter of public interest, among other things, but provided that something is done reasonably and in good faith. In the Andrew Bolt case, he got his facts wrong and he never checked his facts. He was not acting, as the court found, in good faith. And that was how the law was applied in the Bolt case.
Now, just turning to the issue of racism itself more widely, how much of a problem do you think this is in the Australian community, or do you think it's a general problem at all, or rather just isolated cases from time to time?
Australia has come a long way in race relations, but unfortunately from time to time we are reminded, sometimes in very violent fashion, that not everyone is extended a fair go on the basis of their race. Not long ago, for example, we saw some very confronting images of two young women attacking a man on a bus on the Gold Coast, an attack that was preceded by racial taunts and insults. In terms of the state of Australian society, we know from research conducted by the Scanlon Foundation that about 19% of Australians report that they've experienced racial or religious discrimination at some point during the past 12 months. This was from last year's result.
That does seem very high.
This has been...
That's one in five.
It is. This is corroborated by research that's been done by the University of Western Sydney with its Challenging Racism Project, which finds that one in five Australians have indeed experienced race hate talk of some kind. That research also finds that 11% of Australians report that they've been excluded from social activities or the workplace on the basis of race. 5% of people, according to this research in Australia, have been physically assaulted because of their race. These numbers help to illustrate just how just how many people in Australian society today have experienced racism.
How do you think we'd compare with comparable countries, America, Britain, for example?
It's very difficult to make an authoritative comparison, Michelle, simply because the data on all this is quite imperfect. But from what we can extrapolate, it's fair to say that liberal democratic societies in the West, for want of a better term, tend to exhibit very high levels of racial tolerance when compared to other parts of the world. There was a World Values Survey that was published in the Washington Post last year, which illustrated that a number of countries in Europe and in Africa exhibited some very low levels of racial tolerance when compared to Northern European, North American countries, and indeed Australia as well.
And what about different communities? Do you think that it's particularly a problem for Indigenous Australians or for migrant Australians, or both?
There's no doubt that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians experience racism in a more structural way. And the evidence on this has been very compelling and authoritative over the years. Research from the Scanlon Foundation also finds that those from migrant backgrounds, namely non-English speaking backgrounds, are also susceptible to experiencing racism at higher levels than other groups in the Australian population. So that research I mentioned earlier, when you refer to that 19% of Australians who have experienced racial or religious discrimination during the past 12 months, if you look at the country of origin, you find that those who are originally from China, Singapore, India, Malaysia, in fact, about 40% of people from those backgrounds report that they have experienced racial or religious discrimination compared to the overall population.
Do you think this is a major factor in the very negative attitudes Australians have demonstrated towards boat people coming here?
I've said on numerous occasions that I believe the debate about asylum seekers, particularly those who arrive by boat, has the potential to spill over into our race relations and social cohesion more generally. Quite simply because not everyone will make a distinction between an asylum seeker, a refugee who's been granted protection, a protection visa, an international student, a skilled migrant on a 457 visa, a skilled migrant on another visa, or a second or third generation Australian, or indeed Aboriginal Australians. It's been reported to me anecdotally, for example, that there have been Aboriginal Australians who've been told on the street to go back to where they came from. So what you can have in a public debate which gives license to people to point to some as being illegal is a license for a more general hostility to those who don't look like the majority.
And do you think that the problem of racism in Australia has improved or got worse?
We have made progress on this issue, in my view, over the decades, and it's important to take a long view of things. Where once there may have been people who would subscribe to doctrines of racial superiority, this is no longer the case. I think only a very small number of people in Australia would sign up to doctrines of racial superiority. What you've seen is racism evolving in some ways, and I think the conversation has moved on to more casual forms of racism. While so-called racists may not sign up to a doctrine of racial superiority, they may nonetheless say and do things which impact the ability of others to participate on an equal footing. And not everyone realises that their words and behaviour can have a negative impact on another person, even when it's devoid of ideological motive or doctrinal content.
So in terms of your own work, what are you mostly concerned with? What takes up your time? Is it investigating particular examples or complaints, or is it trying to get more education about the whole issue and the need for tolerance around?
I see myself as an advocate for racial tolerance and fairness in Australian society, Michelle. It's important for us to realise that our words and behaviour can impact others, and we need to think about how we treat others in our everyday lives. This goes to the heart of the Racism It Stops With Me campaign that I lead at the Commission. So far, since it was launched in 2012, we've attracted more than 210 organisational supporters who have pledged to undertake anti-racism initiatives.
And what sort of initiatives are those?
For example, the Ventura Bus Company, which is a supporter, has introduced protocols for their bus drivers on how to deal with racist incidents when they arise on their buses. We have now approximately 40 local government areas which have joined the campaign and are undertaking very valuable grassroots work in combating racism in local communities. We now have more than 10 universities that have signed up to the campaign and are spreading the message of racial tolerance on campuses to students, to staff, and indeed to the broader communities in which they're embedded. These are the sorts of practical examples of anti-racism work that our supporters are doing in a range of spheres of life, whether it's sport, business, civil society, education, public transport, or government service provision.
And you also deal with complaints if people...
The Human Rights Commission deals with complaints, but as Commissioner, like the other commissioners in the areas of age discrimination, sex discrimination, disability discrimination, we don't handle complaints directly. So what happens is if you contact the Commission with an issue and make a complaint, we have a dedicated team of conciliators who will look into the situation, contact the respondent party, bring the parties together, and usually we resolve the matter within a space of 3 to 4 months in the majority of cases.
Do you think that the appointment of Tim Wilson will very much change the dynamics of the Commission? Is it going to be a polarising thing, or do you think it's part of having a pluralistic organisation?
We're a collegiate body, and we will work in that manner. But Tim Wilson comes with very well-known views, and he's made his case vigorously, and I welcome that. Human rights are very important. They should be subject to debate, provided it's done in the right manner. But I'm very optimistic we'll have a constructive and fruitful debate and conversation about all sorts of matters in the years ahead.
Certainly it'll be a lively contest of views. Thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all for today from the Politics Podcast. Thank you to my producer, Matt Dawson. Talk to you next time.